Michelle and Junie, welcome in this morning, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios this morning. If you want to watch us streaming on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, you can watch our stream presented by Superbook Sports. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle, Jared Cassidy. We also have a guest in studio today, Adam Brown, one of my former students. How are we doing today, Junie?
Doing really good. Super Bowl is tomorrow. We're going to have ourselves a little Super Bowl party with some buffalo dip and buffalo wings. And I would like to ask the audience today if you can text into our text line, 615-737-1025. I am trying to find a place that caters wings. I need a good place to find some buffalo wings. So if you have a good option in the Nashville area, please text in because I need some last minute ideas.
Yeah, this is make or break right now because you are hosting the Super Bowl party.
It is, yes.
And I will be in attendance.
Yes, you will. but as you can relay to the audience, I will be whipping out my special, the thing that I am so proud of that my mother gave to me, and that is my buffalo dip. That is second to none. Best buffalo dip around the block.
I will say it is pretty good. Jared, how are we doing, and what is your favorite Super Bowl tailgate dish?
Ooh, man, that's a tough one. Pretty good this morning, though. But, he already said buffalo chicken dip. Mm-hmm. That is one of my favorites, but I'm a big fan of the, like, assorted meats and cheeses tray kind of person. Like, you put some of those in there, throw some hot sauce around it. Yeah.
Charcuterie board.
Yeah, funny you say that because that's what Michelle is bringing to our Super Bowl party tomorrow.
Smart. I mean, yeah, my wife is a great cook, so shout out Molly. She is phenomenal at cooking, so anything that she makes is really pretty good. We take over to her friend's house, but don't know what she has on board for tomorrow night. I guess I will find out today.
And listen, we want to hear what your favorite Super Bowl dishes are. So text us in 615-737-1025. We'll be reading them throughout the show, Junie. But Drew on the text line says Boombas or Edley's is a good option as far as the chicken wings.
See, I looked at Edley's. I want buffalo wings. And I feel like all of Edley's is barbecue. Mm-hmm. And I'm not looking for that. Now, Boombas, I've never actually, we did try Boombas.
Oh, they were really good.
Were really good.
We were at trivia night.
Yeah, for stars.
That
might be the move.
Boombas.
Who texted that in again?
Drew,
thank you very much. I'm going to look into Boombas now.
Okay, so throughout the show, Boombas is your number one option right now, but I'm sure we will figure it out by the end of the show where we are getting wings.
Yes.
For tomorrow. Hope everybody is going to have a fun weekend. It is a little bittersweet, though, because it is our last weekend of football, and we have to go 7 months without it. But it's okay. We will enjoy it while we can.
You're raising my anxiety level.
The end is near.
We will enjoy it while we can. And listen, if you listen every Saturday morning, you know how we like to start off the show. We got our morning brew coming up, giving you guys the biggest headlines. Jared, hit it.
Taking you around the sports world for the biggest headlines. This is the morning brew, presented by Nashville Jam Company on Michelle and Junie.
One of the biggest stories this week was Vanderbilt basketball taking down the Tennessee Vols in Memorial on a buzzer beater. Listen, I was at the Nash Vegas event for the Preds. I was sad I couldn't watch the entire game, Junie, but I saw on my phone the ESPN update, you know, the close game alert.
Yeah.
And it said 8 seconds left, 2-point game, whips out my phone. I'm in Bridgestone at the event. I got to see the last play, which is really what you want to see. But huge win for Vanderbilt, huge win for Jerry Stackhouse, especially after their performance against Alabama just a couple days ago. I mean, if you look at that performance and then you fast forward 8-9 days to this performance over a top-ranked Tennessee team, pretty incredible. As far as the Vols front, you know, they lost on the road here to Vanderbilt. You know, we've seen some of the flaws with this team as far as shooting this year, but they're still a month away from the tournament. They're still in really good position. I think it could hurt their one seed opportunities, but, I mean, they just need to get their things together. But right now is the time to, right? We've seen some of their weaknesses these last couple of weeks. Right now is to get your bleep together because we've got a month until the SEC tournament is here in Nashville, which we'll be broadcasting from. We'll have a lot of coverage from here in Nashville.
And sometimes in college basketball, having a tough loss like that, especially at this time of the year, where it's not going to kill you, mm-hmm. but it's going to wake you up.
Mm-hmm.
And when we look that the conference championships are only like 3-4 weeks away,
yeah.
this is a loss that's going to, you know, really get this Tennessee team up and I think ready for the SEC tournament as they really do try to push. But like you said, a loss like that could cost you the one seed going into the NCAA tournament.
I agree. But if you do look at their record, their conference record, I mean, the SEC is one of the deepest college basketball conferences right now. They will play Missouri this week, and then coming up they will have Alabama, which will be a huge one in Knoxville, and then Vanderbilt will be at Florida this weekend. So that's definitely a winnable game for Vanderbilt. They probably would have to win out if they want a chance to make it into the tournament, but they might have a chance, you know, maybe if they lose one or two, but they have a chance to potentially sneak in, but the NIT is looking more and more likable for them. They just had a couple non-conference wins earlier this season that really, really hurt them.
It would be really good for Jerry Stackhouse if they started to go on a run. And I think it would be really good for not only this state, but this town. And mm-hmm. and if they were to make it into the tournament, you know, a lot of naysayers saying that he didn't deserve the extension that he got mm-hmm. in the beginning of the season this year, you know, I think Jerry Stackhouse gets a little bit too much flack. You know, Vanderbilt is a tough place to coach.
It's a hard job.
You know, you are the bottom of the barrel when it comes to athletics in the SEC. And especially when you look at some of the Vanderbilt basketball teams, I would say, you know, like 10 years ago and where they've been at since then. You know, it's really hard to kind of get back into that. So, you know, I'm really kind of pulling for Vandy silently, hoping that they kind of get it together. Just, you know, if them and Tennessee were to both make the NCAA tournament, I mean, that would be really good.
It'd be great for the state and just for college basketball as a whole. Switching to the NBA quick, we have had a crazy NBA free agency. I feel like we haven't even talked about it on this station. I woke up, was it Thursday or sorry, not free agency, the trade deadline.
There we go.
I woke up Thursday morning and I was like, Kevin Durant is on the Suns now?
Yeah, so I didn't think the Nets were going to trade him in season. I thought that they were going to wait maybe till, you know, after the end of the year, because Kyrie is going to be a free agent. So when he requested a trade, they wanted to get something out of him. So they went off and shipped him down to the Dallas Mavericks with Luka Doncic. Now they're a contender, a serious contender out in the West. And, I mean, they were already a contender without him. So, you know, that kind of gives Luka Doncic a real superstar to play with for the first time. I would say, you know, the best player he's played with is, what, Kristaps Porzingis?
Yeah.
I mean, Kyrie Irving's on a completely different level than that guy. Completely two different players. But now you look at the Suns, who were just in the NBA Finals a couple years ago. And now you have Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, DeAndre Ayton. That is a quality for big-time basketball players as a starting lineup. Now, their bench has been a little bit dwindled down, so they don't really have the depth. But when you got a guy like Kevin Durant, and I think Chris Paul is one of the best point guards to ever play the game. I think he is amazing, still at his age. And then Devin Booker, one of the young guards in this league. You know, Ryan,
BBM, baby.
Yeah, no, I remember when he
played was the
for
sixth
Kentucky.
Man, which yeah. is crazy to think of.
Well, that was that year, you know, 38-0, and yeah. you know, lost the Final Fours. It was beautiful. But
Junie, to your point, talking about the West. So Russell Westbrook is also with the Jazz now. You got D'Angelo Russell.
We don't know if they're going to hold on to him in the Jazz.
They could potentially buy him out, but right now he is with the Jazz. He was a part of the D'Angelo Russell trade. He is now with the Lakers. We talked about KD, who is with Phoenix. You got Kyrie with Dallas. So many different moves, but I look at the West now, and I look at how, you know, Memphis, a team right in our state, how the West has just become so much harder.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, when you take two superstars from one team and you add them to two contenders
that are already
going to be there. I mean, I'm looking at the Golden State Warriors. I'm looking at the Memphis Grizzlies. Mm-hmm. And now we're looking at Dallas and Phoenix as well. That could lead up, you know, any four of those teams, if all four were to make it to the semifinals in the Western Conference. I mean, you're talking about some great series, seven-game series in the NBA playoffs. And I'm not much of an NBA regular season guy because, you know, you can watch any given night and the worst team in the league can beat the best team in the league by 20 points. Like, it's so random. But when it comes to the NBA playoffs, I mean, that's the best basketball in the world that you're going to watch. And especially when you got some teams like this that are all kind of evenly matched, it's gonna make for a good summer watching the playoffs.
And then switching over to talking a little college, SEC, Texas and Oklahoma, Junie, they have been approved to move to the SEC starting in 2024, so they don't have to wait those couple years until they join the conference. So not, this will be the last year, this fall upcoming will be the last year that Texas and Oklahoma won't be in the SEC. I think that that will kind of spearhead. I'm sure that we'll see UCLA and USC try to make a expedited process as well to join the Big Ten. But looks like
it's
this
awful.
Is
it's
just moving very quickly.
I hate it so much, Michelle. And I'm going to go on a little rant before we have to go to break. But I hate this movement so much because it's just such a money grab. It takes away from the regional rivalries, the historicness of some of these programs. Like before, I would say before Missouri and Texas A&M left the Big 12 to go to the SEC, the conferences were perfect. You had six major conferences. They all regionally made sense. A lot of them had historical rivalries from when college football originated. And my thinking is if all six of those conferences would have stayed the same, the Big East in general, not breaking up the way that it did. And with NIL money and how that's kind of spreading out the talent across the sport, I mean, you would have been looking at a much more, like, a lot of these conferences being much more competitive instead of the Big Ten and the SEC grabbing all the major teams and creating two super conferences. It's going to make it more lopsided. Whereas I thought with NIL and the ability for players to go out and get money was going to spread out the talent across the country, and now it seems like everybody's just going to go to those two conferences. And it really frustrates me.
And with the announcement of it, you know, they said they would have to wait the 5 years. Obviously, once the genie is out there, it's hard to put it back in the bottle. I'm not surprised that they're figuring out how to get into the SEC earlier. They will each have to pay a $100 million buyout fee to the Big 12. We are seeing college sports just change before our eyes very, very drastically. This will be the last season where we don't have pods, and we'll be waiting for all of those decisions quickly. The Tennessee Titans announced their new offensive coordinator, Tim Kelly, and a couple other coaching moves. Junie and I will discuss that all on the other side. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Yeah, I think it's the right fit for us at this time. It's the perfect fit. Met with some really, really good candidates. One that we were able to bring on here in our staff to help assist and support Tim and our offense and coach our quarterbacks and our passing game coordinator. But yeah, I think what Tim ultimately was able to do was be able to provide some familiarity and some carryover to what we were doing, because I don't think everything's broken. I don't believe that. But then also be able to, you know, add some things that, you know, can really help us and take advantage of some opportunities. I've seen him, you know, call games in this league against us. Felt like he has a great feel for the game. You know, going back to even last year, playing with a rookie quarterback and not having much success against us at their place, being able to shift gears and get into empty almost exclusively, and, you know, give them a chance to get back in that football game. And, you know, we were able to win. But, you know, I think his feel, his energy, his leadership, you know, all things that came out throughout this process of multiple meetings with him and other candidates.
Tim Kelly is the new Titans offensive coordinator. That was Mike Vrabel speaking on it earlier this week. A couple other coaching moves as well. They add Charles London coming from Atlanta. He will be the pass game coordinator and the quarterback coach. Tony Dews has been the running backs coach here, but he will be moving to the tight ends coach. And then their offensive line coach will be Jason Hotailing. Sorry. Jason Hotailing. And then Pat O'Hara is moved down to the passing game analyst. Luke Steckel, run game analyst. He was coming from the tight ends coach. Pat O'Hara was the quarterbacks coach. So a couple different moves. Still looking for a running backs coach. I think that they should maybe ask their new general manager if his dad, Maurice Carter, would maybe want to be the running backs coach here. One of the greatest to ever do it, Junie.
Greatest to ever do it. But I think my guy's probably pushing in his 70s. He's probably comfortable where he is. But I mean, hey, it's food for thought.
You never know, man.
Hey, listen. He might know somebody. Call him up. Be like, hey, you got a buddy? I mean, he could help us out.
He'll be in his son's ear like, hey, you got to hire this guy. You got to hire that guy. Welcome back into the Michelle and Junie Show. I'm Michelle Knezvig, Junie Riddle, Jarrett Cassidy. We are live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios this morning discussing the Tennessee Titans offensive coordinator hire in Tim Kelly. Up until we got the notification earlier this week, I was full in on that it was going to be Matt Nagy. We weren't going to hear anything out of the Tennessee Titans until after the Super Bowl. Tim Hasselbeck on our station felt very confident that Matt Nagy was the front runner candidate. And I think everybody just really ran with that, Junie. And then I almost was a tad surprised, not surprised because I didn't think that he wasn't a viable candidate, Tim Kelly, but surprised because I felt confident about Tim Kelly and I felt like he was the front runner. And then when we hear this small bit of news that, okay, Tennessee has reached out to Eric Bieniemy and Matt Nagy to interview them, and essentially it's going to be a wait until the Super Bowl is over. And then all of a sudden I get the update on Twitter that Tim Kelly is hired. Junie, what were your first thoughts when you saw that this week?
I was a little bit disappointed, I'm not going to lie, because I feel when a team hires within, you do it quickly. And so when we heard the rumors that the Titans had reached out to Matt Nagy, Eric Bieniemy from the Chiefs, and that they were wanting an interview and it was requested, there was never a response, I was like, okay. They're going to wait on these guys to wrap up with their playoff run, and then after the Super Bowl, they'll give both of them an interview and go with whoever they think is best. And I thought that that's what they were holding up on. But apparently not. Apparently, they were keeping a lot of these candidates under the rug, and they ended up going with the guy that, you know, a lot of us, before all these rumors and speculations and but you know, before Tim had came out and said that, we all thought it was going to be Tim Kelly. So I was a bit disappointed that it took so long for it to happen, just for that to be the move and for them to not even get a chance to interview with one of the Chiefs guys. Also was a bit disappointing because this is one of Vrabel's guys. This is another Houston guy. It's another guy that he's worked with. And I really wanted to see him kind of go out of his comfort zone to really show us and the fans that, hey, what went on last year was unacceptable. And we want to go into a new direction. And I feel like bringing in Tim Kelly is kind of saying, well, you know, maybe we'll run it back. And for me, and you know this, and the audience that listens to us on a weekly basis knows this, I don't think that that is the right move to do. And I'm not saying – listen, I'm not saying Tim Kelly's a bad hire because I think the guy has potential. He showed some good things in Houston when Deshaun Watson was there. But at the same time, I just felt like it was a comfortable hire. I felt like if you were going to hire him, you should have done it a lot earlier because he's already in-house. He was already your number one candidate. And I just felt disappointed when I heard that news a little bit. Not saying it's because of Tim Kelly, but the length that it took and the kind of the teasing that they might go into a different direction was what really kind of frustrated me personally.
Well, and I think the reason that it took so long to come out was because I think they were figuring out all the other offensive moves and positions within the coaching staff. As I mentioned, they still need to hire a running backs coach. But I think, you know, we got excited once we heard that, oh, they're reaching out to a Matt Nagy, they're reaching out to an Eric Bieniemy. And then reports came out actually this past week or last week, I'm sorry, that Eric Bieniemy has said that he would like to work with a defensive head coach,
yes,
with a defensive mind. So that puts, you know, the Ravens in the conversation. That's why people were tying him here to Tennessee. That puts Washington in conversation. But Eric Bieniemy also spoke at the Super Bowl and said that, you know, he has not had any interviews for an offensive coordinator position. He's only interviewed with the Indianapolis Colts for a head coaching position. So I think when we heard all of that, lines were pointing to, okay, they're still waiting in this process. They're still interviewing people. They did bring Charles London in from the outside.
Yeah.
And Mike Vrabel got to watch him coach as the offensive coordinator at the Senior Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So Vrabel touched on that. He had an interview with Jim Wyatt on that, and he said it was good to be able to see him actually in action coaching these guys. But Tim Kelly has had some success when he was in Houston. Earlier this week, we had Charles Robinson on with Robbie and Rex Road, and he touched on and gave us his thoughts on what he thinks about Tim Kelly as a new offensive coordinator here.
Well, I mean, it makes some sense because there's the familiarity there. And I'll tell you what, my experience with Tim, you know, is limited, but I do remember that in the Bill O'Brien era with Houston, there was always, especially under Deshaun Watson, it was like, well, when are they going to turn this guy loose? Like, when's he going to really, you know, hit his stride? And Tim, it kind of went through this deal in 2020 where, you know, Tim was calling plays and they got off to a rough start. And I remember Bill O'Brien, like, you know, taking play calling back. Eventually Bill O'Brien ends up getting ousted. And the moment when you saw Watson kind of got turned loose and they started to run this, you know, spread passing attack. And he just started racking up numbers. It was Kelly that was responsible. I mean, inside the organization was sort of like, okay, we finally gotten to the point where this guy has blossomed. And, you know, internally they were really, really happy with him. And when David Culley ended up getting the job next year, it was sort of understood like, hey, he's going to be your OC. But then obviously everything went south. You know, they didn't have Deshaun Watson and Watson no longer wanted to play for the organization. That dramatically changed, you know, his future. I think the one struggle that he really had, and I it's hard to really put it on him because of what the roster looked like. He just couldn't run a complimentary, you know, passing attack, a lot of it, or excuse me, a complimentary running attack and just balance out the scheme. But, you know, it was hard to blame him because just what they had to work with, there was, you know, some scheme fit issues with the talent. And, you know, to me, I just thought we never really got a chance to see what he could do other than this small snapshot of how impressive Watson really looked under him. Watson was able, a lot of the offense was put into Watson's hands. It was like, look, we're going to take this. We're going to spread it out. You're going to have these opportunities to, you know, find what you want to do. If someone's not open, don't be afraid, you know, to run and, you know, handle the game the way you want to handle it with your skill set. It was impressive. It was very short. Just never got a chance to get a full look at him. So, it's hard for me to say, hey, this is, you know, great. I did see a great snapshot, but it's like, what quarterback is he going to be working with? And, do they have, I guess, the athletes to run that complimentary running game, which I would think they do. They're much better positioned than Houston ever was to balance out the scheme with him.
That was Charles Robinson earlier this week, and he said he got to see a small snapshot of what Tim Kelly was able to do at offensive coordinator with his short time with Deshaun Watson, and then what he was able to do with Davis Mills. And even Mike Vrabel touched on that, what he was able to do with Davis Mills last year when the Tennessee Titans were fighting for that one seed and Houston gave them a little run for their money. But the biggest question, and Charles Robinson hit on it there, is what will the personnel look like for Tim Kelly and who will be his quarterback? Junie and I will give our thoughts all on the other side. 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, live here in Nashville from the Hiller Plumbing and Heater Plum... Heater... Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios this morning, Junie.
You're worried about what they do, not what they are. They do the heating and cooling.
Just got to get it all out there this morning. Listen, talking the Tennessee Titans, what will this offense look like next year with the hiring of Tim Kelly? And who will their quarterback be? Weigh in on our text line, 615-737-1025. I want to get to one text quickly, Junie, before we head into who we think should or will be the quarterback next year here in Tennessee. Ryan from Chicago, one of our good friends, said, why would Eric Bieniemy want to leave an OC position for another OC position? What am I missing? And I think that this is a constant question.
I was wanting to get into this.
This is a constant question for people asking, and I should have probably brought this back up. Right now, Andy Reid is the play caller in Kansas City. So, you know, Eric Bieniemy, he has had success with this offense, but he hasn't been in a position where he's been able to call plays.
He wants to go to an organization to where the head coach is primarily focalized on the defense. That way, he has full reign on the offense. Now, when it comes to the trickle-down effect as to why the Titans went to Tim Kelly, I think that Eric Bieniemy is looking at this like, all right, my number one option is I want to get the head coaching job with the Colts. If not, I want to be the OC of either the Ravens, the Commanders, or the Titans. And I think if you look at those three offenses, as we currently sit here, the Titans are the worst OC job, in my opinion, out of those three teams.
Even the Commanders?
Even the Commanders. Because, the Commanders have three really good receivers.
But who's going to be their quarterback?
That is also another question. And I think that they're going to go out and get one of these Derek Carrs, Jimmy G's, maybe even Ryan Tannehill. I just think that the structure of their offense is set up to be good. They got a decent O-line. They got three good receivers. They got a couple running backs that can make good plays. It's a well-rounded offense, and I think that Bieniemy and Ron Rivera would work out really well, in my opinion. I just think there's a lot more to do with the Titans' offense to fix it than there is with the Commanders.
Well, and the biggest question, Junie, will be, is Ryan Tannehill still going to be the starting quarterback here in Tennessee? Earlier this week, Jared Stillman, he's been on Radio Row. He got a chance to talk to Pac-Man Jones, and he gave his thoughts on how he views Ryan Tannehill as a quarterback in this league.
Pac, what do you think about the Titans now when you look at them?
Titans just a team. They got a really great running back. Tannehill is an Andy Dalton. He can't beat you with his arm.
What'd you think about Tannehill when you played against him?
I've never really, like, he couldn't beat us.
Mm-hmm.
He got one. He used to throw the deep ball pretty decent, but, like, comeback digs, I don't think he has – He's not elite, but he's not trash.
Mm-hmm.
He's in that class of the BC,
mm-hmm.
the Baker Mayfields.
Derek Carr.
The Derek Carrs.
Kirk Cousins. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Kirk can throw the ball everywhere. He just don't have no
Pac-Man Jones, you never know what you're going to get from that guy. Jared had some funny quotes. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that interview, you can listen to it back on Spotify, Apple Music, or on 1025thegame.com. Pac-Man Jones really let it all out there and didn't hold anything back. And, you know, based off of this sound clip from him, we had Jared on Chase and Michelle yesterday, and I asked him the question about Ryan Tannehill, and I said, you know, you compared Ryan Tannehill to a Jalen Hurts. We've seen what Jalen Hurts has been able to do, you know, with all of the pieces around him. He's got a great offensive line. He's got a great defense. He's got two elite wide receivers. And Jared said, well, we've seen Ryan Tannehill, you know, be in the conversation for MVP. But I don't agree.
I
don't agree because, yeah, we've seen Ryan Tannehill make it to the AFC Championship, but we've seen him do that. We've seen Derrick Henry, the best player on that team, carry that team. And what Ryan Tannehill did is he didn't lose the game for them. I'm not taking
100%.
Anything.
He didn't even throw for 100 yards in those games.
I'm not taking anything away from Ryan Tannehill. He did what he was supposed to do. He was a serviceable quarterback in those games. What he did that helped them get there was he didn't make them lose. He didn't turn the ball over. Whereas I look at this Eagles team and, you know, Jalen Hurts, he's still a young guy in the league. Got his team to the playoffs last year. Now he's on a Super Bowl run. He's had like the most rushing touchdowns for a quarterback.
13.
I mean, I actually think that there has been some, I don't want to say hate, but just, Jalen Hurts, I mean, he's got a great roster. Like, but I'm like, I don't, people are saying, you know, you could plug Ryan Tannehill on that team and they'd win a Super Bowl.
No, I don't agree.
Jalen Hurts has been such an instrumental part of this team and running the football and creating runs for him and the ability to get out of the pocket and his rushing touchdowns.
Listen, we've seen what Ryan Tannehill can do when the offense is fully formed around him. And that was the 2020 year when the Titans had a perennial top five offense. I mean, the offensive line was intact. You had A.J. Brown. You had Jonnu Smith at the tight end position. You had Derrick Henry run for 2,000 yards. You know, Tannehill threw for, let's see here, what was it, 3,800 yards, 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. He also had 7 rushing touchdowns a year. So he had 40 total touchdowns and only 7 interceptions. So he had a really good year, and that is when everything is put around him. But what happened in the playoffs?
Exactly.
He was one and done. He put the offense put up 13 points in that game, and he threw the interception at the end of the game that sealed it to Marcus Peters. When you're throwing a deep ball to Khalif Raymond.
And listen, I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to like say, you know, Ryan Tannehill can't be successful. But I think it's more of the argument of, right, we're already seeing a rookie in Jalen Hurts be a, you know, mid to average, you know, quarterback. But we've seen him take that leap when he's elevated around him. But I don't believe that Ryan Tannehill would be able to be the type of quarterback that Jalen Hurts is to
get
to the
Super Bowl. I'll put it this way. Ryan Tannehill was healthy in 2020. Jalen Hurts missed 2 games this year. And I think if he would have played in those 2 games, he would have won.
He would have been MVP.
Of the NFL. He would have been MVP. We can say Ryan Tannehill was a candidate for MVP, which I honestly don't remember because he didn't win. And he probably wasn't in the top 3. He was probably a dark horse, 4th or 5th that year. But that was Ryan Tannehill's best season. And that was also like his 8th year in the league. This is Jalen Hurts' 3rd year. His 2nd full year as a starter, right? Philadelphia has put everything around him, yes.
Was it 2019 when he was in the MVP conversation?
It was 2020.
Okay,
was 2020.
So Aaron won that year.
So
Rodgers.
So when you look at Jalen Hurts this year, he threw for 3,700 yards, missing 2 games, 22 touchdowns, 6 picks, and he ran for 760 yards and 13 touchdowns. So In totality, he had 35 total touchdowns. He went 14-1 as a starter. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia's 2 other losses were when Gardner Minshew was in the game. And I could argue that Philadelphia would have probably won both of those games if Jalen Hurts was in those games.
And, Junie, your point. There's a difference between being in the conversation of the MVP and a difference between if Jalen Hurts didn't get hurt, didn't have that shoulder injury, and he played in those 2 games, I feel pretty confident that he would have been this year's MVP. We got a couple calls on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We are going to go to the first caller. We got Ray in Dixon. You want to weigh in on Tim Kelly? Hey, Ray, how are you this morning? Let's see.
Hey, good morning. It's Ray and Dixon. Am I on?
Yep, you're on.
Hey, sorry about that. I didn't hear that. Sorry. Thanks. Enjoying the show. And I love the conversation about Tim Kelly. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on how dependent on the players you have, how dependent is his success on our players? Because I'm thinking of San Francisco when Brock Purdy goes down and Josh Johnson goes down and Brock Purdy has to come back in. They weren't going to throw. There was no passing game at that point. Mm-mm. And I'm thinking if the Titans don't get an offensive line and get some receivers that can get open, what's the point? I mean, I think that I'm just wondering how much his success is going to depend on the players that we have next year.
Yeah, Ray. Great question. We'll get to that right now. Thanks for calling in today.
And we saw that.
Thanks.
And we saw that when he had the year in Houston with Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson had his best year, 33 touchdowns, 7 picks, 4,800 yards. Mm-hmm. I mean, he played outstanding. He led the league in passing the following year. You know, yeah, they had the 32nd overall offense in the league. But that was with a rookie quarterback, Davis Mills, third-round pick. And we've seen what Davis Mills is this year. Houston's moving off Davis Mills.
Yeah.
When Tim Kelly was the OC in Houston, you know, Davis Mills was considered, okay, he's the guy. We can roll into next year knowing that, you know, he can be the starter. Because Tim Kelly made him look good. I think Tim Kelly is a pretty good offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. I was excited about the new direction with the Chiefs. So with you know, my disgruntledness with the Titans on how they waited so long to hire him isn't me projecting a negative outlook on Tim Kelly. I still think he'll be a good OC.
And I think, Junie, what you hit on there was perfect, right? We've seen him with an elite quarterback, and then we've seen, although they were the last offense in the NFL when he was working with Davis Mills, that their record and, you know, their ranking, if you watch them in game, I mean, towards the end of the year, he was able to do things with that team that that team shouldn't have been able to do. I mean, they were in the game when the Tennessee Titans came to Houston and were trying to fight to secure that one seed. But it looks like we have another caller, Andrew, on the phone. You want to weigh in on the Eagles-Tannehill conversation. Andrew, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, good morning. Enjoying the conversation. I think that when you look at Jalen Hurts, he has a command of the offense that you don't see in a lot of quarterbacks. I mean, when he's on the field, he has the command of the offense. He moves the team forward. Tannehill, it's hard to make that comparison. You can win a Super Bowl without an elite quarterback. We saw that in Baltimore. And it's sort of unfair to make comparisons with the Titans because you don't have an offensive line. The whole line was banged up all year. And then you didn't have A.J. Brown anymore. So, you know, Traylon Burks was hurt all year. So it's really hard to make that comparison without a healthy offensive line to get you into the playoffs to see what you can do. And that's just sort of my thing. But when it comes to Jalen Hurts, he has a command of the offense that even with Ryan Tannehill healthy, you don't really see it. Ryan Tannehill looks like he's running plays, play after play after play. But when Jalen Hurts is on the field, you know that he's going to he has a command. He's going to sort of do something that you have to be wary of or watch out for. And that's my take.
Thanks for calling in, Andrew. And to his points on, you know, Jalen Hurts is also making plays out there. He's making things happen where I feel as, you know, Ryan Tannehill, he's running plays. I think that was an interesting comparison from Andrew there. But
I got a question to pose you when we come back.
Okay,
but I got
Junie,
an interesting question for you.
I like a little tease there. Junie and I will continue the conversation on who will the quarterback be here in Tennessee? Where does Ryan Tannehill rank among all the quarterbacks in the league? And could we see a certain veteran quarterback coming to Tennessee next year? You're listening to the Michelle and Junie Show on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app.
Around the league?
Not necessarily, no. It's not like a sexy topic. You hear a lot about Rodgers. You hear a lot about Carr. Tannehill's like, it's like another tier, maybe because I don't know why. No, there's not a lot of chatter, but I think if I had to guess right now, I think he'd be released. And I think they would go in another direction. I don't know if it is Malik.
Malik stinks.
Yeah. I mean, I think they drafted him in the third
round. Yeah. And he stinks.
Okay. So you don't believe in Malik. I don't know if that means drafting a quarterback or going the free agency route. Do they try to get a placeholder like a Jacoby Brissett? I'm just throwing out, this is not inside. I'm just thinking out loud. If they want to try to continue rebuilding throughout the draft in another year.
That was Jordan Schultz, NFL insider on The Score earlier this week with Jared Stillman on Radio Row in Arizona for the Super Bowl. Welcome back into the Michelle and Junie Show. Michelle Knezevic, Junie Riddle, Jared Cassidy. Jordan Schultz thinks that the Tennessee Titans, he said, not based off any information, inside information, but just by looking at the league, looking where this team is, thinks that they will be moving off Ryan Tannehill next year. Junie, you specifically wanted to bring this audio to the show today.
I did. And it just goes to you because I've been saying this since the Titans were playing in season, that they need to move off Ryan Tannehill. It's not that Ryan Tannehill's a bad quarterback. He's just an average quarterback. And when you have an average quarterback and you're playing in the conference where all the young talent is, you're getting left behind. And on top of that, Ryan Tannehill is a top five cap hit this year. And it's like, do you want to pay all that money when you need to rebuild your offensive line? You need to go out and get another receiver or two and keep paying a guy that you know is not going to take you to the promised land in the AFC. And so when he said next year go out and get a guy like Jacoby Brissett and really shoot for 2024, which is going to be an excellent QB draft, I'm like, that's been my plan for the last 2 months. And at first people were calling me crazy. And now people are starting to kind of see where I'm coming from.
I don't think anybody said you were crazy.
Well, not you. And Michelle, you would never say I was crazy. But I'm talking about when I was filling in with Willie and D-Mace over Christmas. They were like, well, why would they do that? Why would they go out and get a worse quarterback? You really think that this they would do that? I was like, listen. I was like, this isn't a total rebuild. This isn't like we're uprooting everything. We're not trading Jeffrey Simmons. We're not getting rid of our defensive stars. We are just going to move off Tannehill, fix everything around him, get a placeholder for the season, and then go out and get your young guy. And by that time, Joe Burrow's going to be paid. Lamar Jackson's going to be paid.
You hope so.
Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, they're all being paid. And they got to pay big money into these quarterbacks. And you're going to be the team with a young stud rookie on a rookie deal and have a team built around him. And that's how you win Super Bowls. That's how you get to the big game, is when you don't pay an average quarterback top five money. It's just, it just makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense to do that. And so when Jordan brought that up, using a guy like Jacoby Brissett or Mitch Trubisky land for 1 year, when you have a championship level defense and good parts on the offense and you just got to plug some aspects into it, go out and get your young quarterback and try and restart this run. And I thought he made a good point.
I will say, though, listening to that audio, because the first time I heard it was right before we started the show this morning, and nothing against Schultz. He's a national guy, covers the national media. But when I heard Jared asking him that question, and, you know, he brought up Malik Willis, it gave me, like, an inkling that he didn't know much about what is going on here.
That I totally agree with that. And I'm not, and so does a lot of the national media, because they still look at Malik Willis as the potential first round pick that a lot of people hyped him up last year to be, because they flat out didn't watch him play.
Yeah. So that was the only like hesitation when I heard that audio clip, but you know. To your point, there was a report that we haven't talked about yet, Junie. The Chicago Bears have the number one overall pick. They have their guy in Justin Fields. There was a report that came out over a week and a half ago, and actually we had Jared on our show, and he said that, you know, he was kind of talking around Radio Row, and he figured out who the insider may have been, and he thinks that there might be just some more truth or more action, I guess.
More validity to the claim.
Yeah, exactly. So Ben Devine on February 2nd said, the Bears have already received offers from two teams for the number one overall pick, according to Da Bears blog. And then in quotes, neither are the Texans or the Colts. And then follows that tweet up by update. One of the inquiring teams is the Titans, who have the 11th pick in this year's draft. So I think that is very, very interesting. Junie, your plan on wanting to move off Ryan Tannehill this year, but listen, if Rand Carthon's coming in, that hearing that report, if I'm a Titans fan, makes me feel so confident in the new GM we got, because even if they don't do it, it is showing that he wants to make big moves. He wants to make sure that you have a quarterback for this team. And listen, I don't care what pick you are in the draft. You should be inquiring if you have a chance to get that number one overall pick. And will they use it? Will they actually go through with it? Junie and I will throw out some other options of whether should the Titans trade up to get that number one overall pick, or should they go out and get an MVP caliber veteran guy? You're listening to the Michelle and Junie Show on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are live on this Saturday morning from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Switching to some Nashville Predators action, we'll be handing the baton over at 10:30. Show's a little bit shorter today because we have some early hockey. We'll be handing the baton over to Chase McCabe and Pete Weber at 10:30 for our pregame coverage, and then 11:30 puck drop in Philadelphia today for the Nashville Predators. But right now we are going to be joined by Nick Keezer. He produces Chase and Michelle and also Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Nick Keezer is also, you can listen to him on Preds Insiders with Robbie Stanley. Nick, how are we doing this morning? And thanks for joining us.
Yeah, guys, glad to be here. Yeah, pretty good morning, bright and early action. I'll always take having an early game as opposed to a late game. So this one should be fun today.
I completely agree. We love the early ones, especially when we don't have football on a Saturday. But Nick, John Hines joined Robbie and Rex Road earlier this week after the loss to Vegas here in Nashville and discussed maybe his thoughts on his teams. I want you to listen to this piece of audio right now, and I want you to tell me after just what you think of this response from John Hines.
To that point, though, John, I mean, you brought up that message a lot with the players. Like, is it frustrating that that's a message that you're still having to deliver at this point based on the response that we saw the other night?
No, I think it's the challenge. You know, it's the challenge of coaching. You know, I don't think frustrating is a good word. I think it's challenging. And also at the same time, looking for that leadership group to really, really grab hold and lead with the intensity level and the focus level and the commitment to play the right way and to maximize their talent. You know, that's what's going to get us going. And I think when you look at the time before the break, you know, yeah, there was a big impact because there were some things said said by the players, you know, to each other with all of us in the room. But then if you look at the actions of those games and the performance of those players in those games, that's what we need more of.
So, Nick, that was John Hines earlier, you know, asked whether he was frustrated with this team. What did you take from that answer? Do you think he is a little frustrated, and do you think we saw this team sort of sluggish when they came out earlier this week?
Well, I think there's no question about it. He's a very frustrated guy right now. I mean, you just have to look at the simple math of what it's going to take for them to get into the postseason right now. I mean, they need roughly 18 to 19 wins, and they also have to bank on some other teams not playing at their best. And I know that one team in particular that's not playing pretty well lately has been the Minnesota Wild. And you always have to just you can go ahead and count in the Colorado Avalanche, right? But if you're John Hines and if you're the Preds, this is a game today that, you know, they need to really just go ahead and take it over. They did not have a quick start. On Tuesday night, they had 6 shots through the first 40 minutes. That's terrible. You cannot start a game out that flat, especially when a team's forcing you to the outside. And the same thing over and over again is just not working. I don't know why they would not adjust accordingly. Maybe Vegas played that good of defense. They led the league in the NHL in block shots. But I think this is a group that the creativity is there. The skill is definitely there. It's about putting it into action. And I think guys like Parson and Glass and also Duchesne, to his own credit, lately he's been playing better. But you can't have a select few guys just trying to carry this team. This is a cohesive job that all of them need to have do well for themselves. And John Hines demands more. I'm not sure what that looks like inside the locker room. I'd love to be a fly on the wall to see what his intensity level is like, Michelle. But I really think he's a guy that does demand a lot of this group. And I think it really comes down, they don't need another team meeting. People have been joking about that for a week. But I really think this is a team that just, it's really simple. But at the same time, it's so complex because you have to think about, okay, how can they improve? And I think that answers for themselves. I think one interesting thing that Hines told the media after the game on Tuesday was he's like, I have to go back and go look at it. So I'm curious to see what he sees in his eyes and what they have to fix here because they have some pretty important games coming up.
Well, one of those games being today in Philadelphia, Nick, at 11:30. Our pregame's coverage will start at 10:30 with Chase McCabe and Pete Weber. Looking at today's game, I know we hate to use the term must win, but today for the Preds, you know, as far as just getting some points under their belt, another win, and building their confidence, how much of today is a must win, and how much do we need to see the power play be effective today, Nick?
That's a good thing. I really think this is a team that you can take advantage of in terms of special teams. Philadelphia does not have a great power play, and their penalty kill doesn't look so great as well. Their goaltending is another thing that I keep in mind as well, because you have a guy like Carter Hart and you have Felix Sandstrom who's back there as well. And I think the Preds have to take full advantage of their talent, like I already mentioned, Michelle. I think the one thing I think of in terms of today's game is you need to hop on this Philly team as much as you can early, because they did beat the Edmonton Oilers this week 2-1. But, I mean, you have to get after them as quick as you can. And the Flyers, and I know I mentioned this in the pregame show when I do enemy lines later today, is the Flyers are 11-5-2 in their last 18. And I was not paying attention to that whatsoever, with that being an upcoming matchup. So they're going to have to get after this forward core really quickly. And Philly's forecheck is really, really good. And you cannot get caught at the wrong time if you're the Preds. And you don't have Alex Carrier, so keep that in mind too. So today is a huge, huge test for them. And I think it's really going to start showing Preds fans even more so, maybe even management, what direction they should really go in.
Nick, I really think the Preds have a great opportunity to win in Philadelphia today, but the games after this, the five games afterward, I feel like are really pivotal to the direction of this season. They got Arizona at home, Boston at home, who Boston's the best team easily in the NHL right now. You got Florida at home. They're on the outside looking in, a super talented team as well, at Minnesota, Central Division rival that you're trying to compete for the wild card spot, and then Vancouver at home. So you got some winnable games here, some really big games that they're going to need to get. What do you think about this upcoming stretch for the Preds, and how do you think the outcome of this stretch is going to be as we approach the trade deadline?
I mean, it's all the more important, Junie. I mean, that's a great question. I know that the trade deadline is looming. I believe it's March 3rd. So if you take a look at what is coming up, like you already mentioned, I know that they'll honor PK Subban on Tuesday night. That'll just be a fun game to be at. But, yeah, I mean, they have Boston, and, you know, the Panthers haven't been a great team this year. But I think that's a really big game in terms of what type of players you're going up against. And you got Minnesota. Next Sunday is going to be a huge, huge game. And it will probably be the biggest game of the year in terms of getting points. That's a game that you need to take the full 2 points and not go to overtime. So I don't know. Personally, when you look at the rest of the games, you know, in March, they play like 15 games in 30 days. And so that's going to be a really daunting schedule, Junie. And I really think they need to really take advantage of these home games, because they'll have a stretch of playing 3 games at home during the week, and they'll start off playing the Ducks on the 12th. But yeah, I think they need to take full advantage of when they have these home games, because they'll play teams like the Red Wings, the Blackhawks, the Jets. And then they'll play the Kraken in like a little mini playoff series, and that's going to be your Elle Tolvanen reunion. So I think that week in particular, you're playing 3 teams that are playoff teams, and in my eyes, could make the second round easily. So in my eyes, like I said, looking at those games, man, that's a really daunting schedule, and hopefully the Preds have what it takes, and those games will show you what they have.
And we mentioned the big meeting with the players earlier, where, you know, that they try to, you know, get it together. And they had that 3-game winning streak before the All-Star break, but obviously the 5-1 loss to Vegas was really tough, and it really knocked their playoff chances down quite significantly. Right now, at this moment in time, looking forward, what do the Preds have to do to make the playoffs? And if And do you think that they actually will make the playoffs?
So some quick odds here, because I know obviously I could prep for these playoff questions, even though there's not very many things to talk about in terms of playoffs. So on Money Puck, you all should go check this every week and see if it changes too. But last week, the Preds had a 23% chance of making the postseason. That number has actually gone up today to 28. So it's encouraging to see that number go up on Money Puck. However, in order for them to make the playoffs, I just look at the 5-on-5 play, and they have to stay healthy too. And that's just a case for every team, obviously. Just be healthy, play well. That's always good. But the Preds, like I already mentioned earlier, they had Parson, Yossi, and Forsberg, and Glass that have really been great for them lately. You need to have more of those guys just pop off as much as you can. Like, just have the best second half ever. And we're in February, in case fans missed. And I think he could have a good month. There's a chance. He's historically been good in this month, but he doesn't have a whole lot of time left this month. And going into March, I know that Chase and Michelle caught up with him earlier this week, but I mean, you can hear from him that he's not too happy with how he's been playing. So if you have a guy like him, Hedep, who scored 42 goals last year, that'd be phenomenal. And then if you also look at the back end too, because I know earlier this year, McDonough and Yossi went a long time without allowing a goal 5-on-5. I think they were close to over 100 minutes together before McDonough got hurt, not allowing a goal on 5-on-5 play. You need to have those defenders who have been kind of lackluster. You need those guys to just block more shots, get the pucks high and hard off the glass, look for some good outlet passes, because those have been the biggest killers for me. And a guy like Fabbro, who has 1 year left on his deal, I know you guys haven't asked me about the deadline, but I would look on just moving ahead of Carrier or Fabbro, because you already signed guys like Cole Smith and Tommy Novak. Now, those are just depth players, but the Preds should think about if they even have a slim chance, if Poile thinks he has a slim chance, go get yourself a good depth piece that's a veteran that maybe you can give up a third or fourth round pick for, maybe a prospect that doesn't mean too much. Go grab someone. See if that's going to help you, because if you're not too confident with the guys that you have, or even one defender who you gave a big contract to last year, if you don't think he's good enough, go get someone else that can help you. I think that's going to be the biggest thing for them. And you said, do I think they make the playoffs? Right now, I don't think they do make the playoffs. I think they're looking in. They might be that last team out. I think there's a really slim chance of them being the number one wild card team. I think that could be either the Avalanche or the Minnesota Wild, if you ask me personally.
Nick Kieser, you can hear him coming up on our pregame coverage starting at 10:30 for Enemy Lines. Nick, thank you so much for helping us preview the game today and discuss the Nashville Predators. Have a good Saturday, and thanks for hopping on with us this morning.
Appreciate it, Nick.
Yeah, guys, talk to you soon. Thanks for having me.
Yes, talk soon. And listen, you can join 1025-1063 The Game today at 3rd and Home, located at 919 3rd Ave North in Germantown, for a Preds watch party as the Preds take on the Philadelphia Flyers at 11:30. Come watch the game, get some Preds swag, and you can also enter to win tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. They've got a mouthwatering menu at 3rd and Home, one of my personal favorites, and they include signature items such as wings. Maybe Junie can get his wings there for the Super Bowl on Sunday. Stuffed breadsticks, classic burgers, hot chicken, and waffles. Also got $18 domestic buckets and $5 Preds punch. Sounds super fun. So listen, pregame coverage starts at 10:30. Coming up next, Junie and I will put a bow on things today, and then we will hand the reins to Chase McCabe and Pete Weber on 1025, 1063 The Game. Our final show with real action football this year, Junie. Oh, not this year, but for the next couple months. 7 months we have to go without football games, which is truly, truly depressing.
Free agency and the draft will get me through the spring, but I'll tell you, Michelle, I'm going to be crawling and scraping during the summer trying to find some happiness, because believe me, I am not a regular season Major League Baseball fan.
At least we will have some.
Missing out, man.
Yeah, I can't. I just can't get into it.
100%.
We got a huge Red Sox fan over there.
Yeah, I'm a huge baseball fan.
I wish I could get into it, honestly.
I have tried.
The summer is my try to take a little step back, let the brain, you know, focus for training camp and get ready for the regular season. But this will be our last edition of Picking for Football Games. But we'll get into some NBA, college basketball, looking at the Superbook lines. But today we have got the biggest game, Junie, the final matchup, Chiefs-Eagles. It is the battle between the best quarterback or will the best team win. You just told me in the break that you still are really, really unsure who your Super Bowl pick is going to be.
I've gone back and forth, Michelle. I cannot decide. This is the Super Bowl that I wanted. I thought it was going to be the best matchup. And I think I've got my pick. I think I'm going to lock it in. Let's get into it. I'm so excited.
I have been saying this since the NFC Championship. I have been on the Fly Eagles Fly train since they won the NFC. I haven't gone back and forth. I haven't been wishy-washy. And I can't today. What if today I was just like, screw it. I'm picking the Chiefs. Just kidding. No, I'm picking the Philadelphia Eagles. They are a 1.5-point favorite in Arizona tomorrow. So give me the Eagles minus the 1.5. Junie, what about you?
So like I said, I was conflicted. And a part of me was like, you know, Patrick Mahomes is the best player in this game. And if he has the ball with 2 minutes left to go, he's going to go down and win it. But MVPs are 0-7 in the
Super
Bowl.
They are.
And the Philadelphia Eagles are going to dominate on both lines of scrimmage. And you know, if you listen to this show, I am all about the big boys up front. And I think that the Philadelphia Eagles are going to get it done, and they're going to win the Super Bowl. Give me the Eagles minus 1.5. But if Patrick Mahomes gets the ball with 2 minutes and some change, and it's under a touchdown game,
you are live betting.
I'm live betting Chiefs.
Jared, what have you been thinking? I haven't even asked you yet today.
Chiefs. Pretty simple.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'll take the points and I'll take Chiefs.
Okay.
Look, don't get me wrong. The Eagles are good, but something about this Chiefs team, man. This is the Andy Reid revenge game, too. So
it is.
Let's don't forget about that. You don't think he wants to beat the Eagles? Maybe a little something extra.
He's 3-0 against the Eagles since being fired by them.
I could see him having a nice barbecue sandwich right before kickoff, settling in, and then just going to town.
A fun stat for you all. So Andy Reid is already the winningest coach in Eagles history. And if he wins this game tomorrow, he will be the winningest coach in Kansas City Chiefs history, beating the Eagles, of course, in Super Bowl 57. So many storylines. You've also got the Kelce brothers. Okay, guys, over-under is set at 51. I'm taking the over. I think that this is going to be a high-scoring offensive game. Junie, what are you thinking for that?
The under has hit in all the divisional rounds and the conference championship games.
Ooh, that's an interesting one.
The under has hit in the last 6 playoff games, doing math. I think it's due. The over will hit in this game. Both of these offenses are going to put up points. Give me the Eagles 27-24.
Okay, let me do my final score prediction. I've got the Eagles 37, Chiefs 34.
Oh, so you're doing the script score. Didn't they come out and say somebody
34-37. Was the script score.
Oh,
that's what she said.
34-37.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, no, there's like a, like somebody had put it out there and they're like, oh, they're releasing the script. Somebody released a script and it was Eagles winning 37-34.
Oh, wow. Well,
which I hope that is the script.
Well, fine, then I'll change mine. 37-35.
There we go.
There we go. Jared, what do you got? Over, under, and final score prediction.
I am feeling the under.
Okay.
And so let's go 28-21.
Oh, okay.
Let's go. They get them by 6.
Barely. Okay, guys, quickly some fun props. This is always my favorite one, picking the Gatorade color. We've got orange plus 250, yellow green plus 350, clear water plus 500, or blue plus 500.
I'm going to go.
Or no Gatorade plus 1600.
If If the Chiefs win, it's going to be orange, but I don't think the Chiefs are going to win.
Okay.
So if the Eagles win, I think it's going to be blue.
Okay, so plus 500. Jared, what do we think in Gatorade color?
I'm going to go clear. Like those options. Ooh. Yeah, give me the clear. Maybe it's like the you know, the Glacier Cherry or whatever that brand is.
Great and then, flavor.
Yeah, we could do that, or we could just go with straight water. So you just never know.
Okay, so I was going to go blue. I went blue yesterday at plus 500. And rapid fire really quick, guys. Whoever is the MVP, what will be mentioned first during their Super Bowl MVP speech? Teammates and team minus 120, city fans plus 325, God, religion plus 370. That's what I am going with. Family plus 690, coaches plus 1200, or team owner plus 2500.
Since I'm picking the Eagles, I'm going fans. There's no question that Eagles fans are crazy. So they always like to shout out their fans. So I think they're going to go with the fans.
Yeah, I'll go family.
Family? Okay. Yep. Super Bowl weekend, our last weekend of football. Everybody handing the baton over to Chase McCabe and Pete Weber. Got our Preds pregame action starting at 10:30. Have a great weekend. Enjoy some football because we won't have it for a while. Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.